Welcome to the Disc Golf Show, a podcast hosted by Levon and Christopher Stalshus. Join us as we discuss the latest in disc golf news. Finally, we are here with our first podcast. We've definitely had some issues and bumps along the way, but we've got everything smoothed out and we are releasing our first podcast. Sit back, relax, or whatever you're doing. Maybe you're at work, maybe you're driving, whatever you're doing, just listen in. Hopefully we can bring you some exciting and very interesting disc golf talk. We've got a lot to talk about tonight, and I'm definitely looking forward to it because it's been an awesome week, awesome weekend as far as disc golf is concerned.
Yeah, so we have a lot to cover from Jonesboro, obviously. It was just very fun to watch and very just a lot to talk about, so I can't wait to get into that.
And we're going to start a tradition on the very first podcast and keep it going for the rest of podcast traditions for the Disc Golf Show, and that is to have a drink at every single show. So today, the drink of the evening is going to be a blackberry bubbly. Blackberry flavor with other natural flavors.
So, sounds good.
Let's get right into it.
Oh, yeah, get that fizz.
Oh, yeah.
I gotta say, I don't think I've ever had a bubbly before, so this is gonna be interesting to taste this.
I gotta say, I'm vicious thirsty. I've been waiting to crack this bubbly open. All right, well, let's get right into it. Wow, it has been an insane weekend. Jonesboro seems to just kind of bring on the tight scores, I guess you could say. There's definitely been some good battles over the years. So just taking a quick look at kind of what happened last year in comparison to this year. But yeah, so Calvin Heimberg actually won this tournament. I had kind of forgot about this. He actually won this tournament in 2020. In 2021, Ricky won it, and he actually won it by 4 strokes. So it really wasn't much of a battle last year. And this is really interesting. So if you look at last year, so we're going to go with spot number 1 to spot number 20. So at last year, tie for 20, there's 5 players tied for 20th. Matt Bell, Terry Roethlisberger, AJ Carey, Ezra Aderholt, and Lance Brown. At 17 under par, Ricky won the tournament at 35 over par. So that's 18 strokes difference between the first spot and 20th. So now, I'm just going to quick jump over to the 2022 one. And this year, obviously there was a tie at the top. And last year there was a 4-stroke difference between first and second place. But this year, the top is 26 under par. Tie for 20th. There is 5 players, once again, at 15. Which is a 9-stroke.
Tightening the gap a little bit.
How far was the other one? I forget already.
I think 20 or something. I'm not even sure.
Okay, I'm going to actually quick snap back.
I think it was 20. I think you said like 20. That's what I had in my head.
Yeah. So just definitely some tightening up of scores. I mean, you look at the top tied at 26 under par. So definitely higher scoring as far as less under par.
Yeah.
So, I mean, 26, that's not very low. That's averaging about 9 under, less, just under 9 under par per round, which is pretty. And last year they were at about 12 under par. So I think it was because of the wind. But yeah, the scores really tightened up, as I said, and it was a really, really tight battle. Kevin Jones, Paul McBeth, and Calvin Heimberg were all tied going into hole 18 at 25 under par. It was really just kind of a a crazy turn of events.
Yeah, it really was.
We had Kevin Jones at 25 under par on hole 15. At that point, Paul McBeth was 22 under par, so he was three behind the lead. And Calvin Heimbrug was 23 under par, so he was two behind the lead. So Kevin kind of had the thing almost wrapped up. All he had to do was birdie hole 17 or 18. Sorry, holes 16. Okay, to seal it up, he had to birdie two holes, basically, at least. So, yeah, he didn't really have it sealed up, but he had a two-stroke lead, and it was really looking like he was in his favor. However, hole 16, Kevin Jones was not at all able to get the eagle. Calvin Heimbrug threw a great shot and put it into circle two for the eagle putt. Paul McBeth was completely out of position on the first shot. They asked Nate Perkins on the ground to take a look at it and see what he had to say and if Paul McBeth had any chance of getting an eagle. And Nate Perkins said no, he had nothing at all. I didn't get a real good look at the shot. However, Paul McBeth threw an amazing shot. Put it inside circle two, and I think it was probably under 40 feet from what I could tell. Maybe 45. And so Kevin Jones had to just pitch up for his par, and then Paul and Calvin just drained their eagle putts. So at this point, Kevin and Calvin were at 25. Paul was at 24. So going into hole 17, Paul's the only one that takes the birdie. So they're all tied up at 25. Hole 18, it started with Paul. Paul pured his drive right in the center. Calvin just smashes his drive.
Yeah, that drive was absolutely incredible.
He was actually inside 250 feet from the basket, which is incredible. Very simple, straightforward upshot for him. Kevin Jones, however, throws a forehand, and he overturned, and he was completely out of position. He threw a hyzer, kind of hit a clump of trees in the middle between the right and the left gap, and then Paul and Calvin threw their shots. Paul just parks it. Calvin had about a 20-foot, 25 maybe, and then Kevin throws his third, tries to give it a good bid, probably from 300 feet, maybe 250. And he gave it enough energy, but it was just a little bit off to the right. Then Calvin makes his putt, and Paul drops his in, and it was a tie between Paul and Calvin. So what were you thinking at this point?
I was obviously really, really intensely watching, but one thing I was really thinking about is just Kevin. You know, I don't know, just last season, didn't quite ever pull it together for any, kind of got some bad breaks and stuff, and just to see this, see him just shank the shot on that last hole, just kind of was a disappointment to me. But yeah, other than that, it was really fun to watch. Paul just throws perfect shot, and then Calvin just completely blows it out of the water. At that point, I was thinking, you know, I was kind of cheering for Calvin, but I knew Paul was probably had the higher chances with as far as just nerves and controlling his nerves in these situations. So that was kind of my train of thought at that point.
Yeah. And I was definitely a little sad for Kevin. I mean, he's been a fantastic player for so long, and he's had a couple elite series wins, no major wins. Last year, I don't think he had any elite series wins, but he was so close on so many, and just some devastating breaks.
Yeah.
I mean, just absolutely terrible. So I'm going to look at his 2021 finishes in comparison to this year. So looking at 2021, he started out Las Vegas 7th, 54th at Waco, 14th at Belton, 5th at Texas State, 32nd at Vintage, and then Jonesboro, he was 4th. So he seems to have a good record at Jonesboro here. So yeah, really a slow start to the season last year as well. This year, he went 4th at Las Vegas, 21st at Waco, 24th at Belton, 23rd at Texas State, 17th at Music City. So really not that much worse than last year. And then at Jonesboro, obviously almost takes down the win, ends up in 3rd.
Yeah.
So yeah, then there was a playoff. So Paul Macbeth was up first, and he threw his shot and just instantly out of the hand. He was like, oh, that's so bad. And it was high. It was a little fluffy off to the left, and it just faded out into the woods. Not really into it, but on the edge at least, and he had a really awkward pitch out. Calvin steps up, just whips the thing dead straight, parks it. So Paul ended up having to try to throw it in forehand, and he missed that. However, as I found out later, Paul Macbeth actually had a pretty unlucky slash devastating slip on that hole.
Oh, interesting.
If you go look at his Instagram post, you can see what he meant. But he mentioned it a little bit. But the tee pad, as soon as you bring that up, you should just read what he had to say.
Yeah.
But the tee pad, actually, I'm not exactly sure what happened or how unusual it is, but you can see on the video, it bunched up, in front of his foot, which means that the turf was sliding on the concrete or wood, whatever is underneath it.
Wow.
And it caused a slip. So the tee pad was kind of in theory coming apart, and he kind of mentioned that in an Instagram post as if that's what partly caused it. So I thought that was kind of unfortunate, but yeah, it was just an awesome event overall. You can just go ahead and read the post directly from his Instagram.
Yeah, here it is. So partway through the post, he said, I was feeling great, especially on the second half of the course. Battling and finding a way to claw back and force a playoff just to have the tee pad rip off the ground and scrunch up, causing a extremely errant throw. Calvin did what champions do when they smell blood, though. Congrats at C. Heimberg on the solid weekend of play. So, yeah, there you have it. Scrunched up tee pad and pretty much just messed up the shot. And, yeah, you can definitely see it there in the video on that post.
Yeah, so a little bit unfortunate there, but overall just an awesome event, as I said. moving over to the FPO side, Kristen Tatar coming out on top by an astronomical amount, 10 strokes. Just an absolutely phenomenal performance by her. Really, really awesome to see, actually. I really just like to see her play. She's classy. She's got a very, very good form, very good putting stroke, and she just seems to be very consistent, which I think is just awesome.
Yeah, and it's just kind of surprising to see one of these dominant wins again, because it's just, it seems like with more time, disc golf is just exploding, and it's just, you kind of expect it to just get tighter and tighter, and then out of the blue, there's just one of these just super dominant wins. So it's just surprising to see, but yeah, congrats to her.
Yeah, she definitely had some good rated rounds. She shot her highest ever rated round and first round at 1022, and then she went 1,006 and then 997, which means she's averaging well over 1,000 rated, probably somewhere around 1,008 rated or somewhere in there, average. And the next competitor, Missy Cannon, didn't shoot at all under, she didn't shoot any 1,000 rated rounds, which, yeah, just awesome to see by her. If you look at the ratings of the players, Kristen Tatar is at 980 right now, so well over her rating. And actually, she's very close to surpassing Paige Pierce. Paige Pierce is at 982. So, yeah.
Wow.
And worth mentioning, Paige Pierce did not do very well. She shot a 941 rated first round. Slightly improvement on the second round, 968, and then finally a 997. Moving down the leaderboards, on the open side of women, I see Valerie Manduhana again. She tied Paige Pierce. However, she did it in a much more reasonable fashion than Paige Pierce did to get to 900 par. She just went 966, 968, 972. Yeah, it looks like second round was probably worst conditions according to rating. She shot a 65, and it was still higher rated than the 63 the previous day. So that's kind of interesting to see. Yeah, so back to some things on the MPO side. That I was noticing as I was watching the live and things like that. And the first was just Gannon Burr in general. I mean, he is a ripper. I mean, I do not understand the guy. He's in the top 10 rankings.
Wow.
For UDisc World Rankings, he's ranked number 9. Just absolutely shredding. I mean, he's pretty much always towards the top on these tournaments, and for the young player that he is, that is just phenomenal. I mean, it's unmatched, basically.
Yeah.
So looking at his finishes this year, absolutely astounding. He went second at Vegas, which was actually a tie for first. He went 25th at Waco Annual Charity Open, 24th at Belton. So a little bit slower there at Waco and Belton. And then he went 7th at Texas State, 4 at Tallahassee, 5th at PDGA Champions Cup, which is a major, solid performance there. And then 5th at Played Against Sports Jonesboro Open. Just, it's just insane. He didn't shoot the best second round. I think that was kind of his lackluster round. So he shot a minus 9 first round, a minus 4 second round, and then so yeah, that was definitely his lackluster round. He went minus 9, which is very good, and it was only 2 strokes off the lead because Alden Harris just shredded and shot an 11 under. And nobody else shot double digits that day. So 2 strokes off the lead, and there was only 1 person that was ahead of him. And then round 2, he shot a minus 4. He just didn't seem to quite get in the rhythm that day. He went par to start, so a little slow. And then hole 6, he got a triple bogey. Wow. So that was extremely devastating. And I wasn't watching it right at the moment, so I don't know quite exactly what happened for that to go down, but just absolutely devastating to his round. And he was 1 over after 6 holes after that. And just watching it on live, he just seemed a little bit out of the groove. I mean, he just kind of, I think it was kind of just in his head, because he would step up and just act hesitant and always kind of act like the wind is being all crazy and things like that, and it just seemed like he just needed to kind of be a little bit more confident in himself. And then the other thing that happened to him in that round was he actually got a time warning. So I believe it was on one of his putts. I don't know which player it was, but one of the players on his card gave him a warning for exceeding the time limit of 30 seconds. So that was very interesting to see. I was disappointed for Gannon Burr's sake, but I'm happy to see that that's happening, because I think it's something that should happen.
Yeah, I totally agree. I like to see that they're cracking down on that rule now, because it's kind of like, if you're going to have a rule like that, then you should be enforcing it. So, yeah, I think as unfortunate as that is for Ganon Burr, I think it's good to see that.
Yeah, I agree. And I think he did okay with handling it. I don't know how he actually felt about it, but he shot it. He still shot a decent round. Round three, though, he comes back again and shoots a minus nine. So ended up in fifth, only four strokes off the lead. I mean, really, if he would have just, even in the last five holes, he was still in it. I guess if you look really closely here, so after hole 12, Ganon Burr would have been at 21 under par. After hole 12, Kevin Jones was 23 under par. Paul McBeth, after hole 12, was 21 under par. So he was in the same situation as Paul McBeth going into the last six holes, which is, I just say that to show how close he was to actually even pulling off the win.
Yeah. So about that triple bogey on hole two, or sorry, round two, hole six. So what happened is it's the hole that goes over the water, and then it's like kind of an island. I think he was maybe attempting a skip shot. He almost made it, but he didn't quite make it over the water. So he went OB, and then he threw from the drop zone, and it seemed like a gust of wind kind of just picked up his disc, and it went kind of long of the island just by a little bit, just so out of bounds. And so that's how that happened.
Oh, so that was the island hole.
Yeah, it was.
That makes a lot of sense.
So he went OB twice and then finally made it in.
Yeah. There's so many storylines here. Another one is Alden Harris, and that was a phenomenal first round by him. However, he did kind of have a lackluster second round. So after the second round, Alden Harris was only at 15 under par. And then round three, because he only shot four under, and then final round he shot a 5 under. So kind of slowed down, but he's showing that he's around, and he's probably going to be around to stay. The other thing is Simon Lazat with a 13 under second round. Highest rated round this year in Elite Series events. I think the only rounds that really beat him were Paul McBeth's rounds at Memorial, which was not an Elite Series event. However, Simon does get the mark as the highest rated Elite Series round this year, at 1091. So yeah, it's an awesome round. I do not know what sort of coverage there will be, if any of that. Disc Golf Network did catch a little bit of it at the end, but not very much. But actually, going into hole 18, he was 15. No, sorry. He was 14 under par. So, yeah. If he would have birdied the last hole, he would, instead of bogeying, he would have been at 15. So, kind of an unfortunate last hole there, but just shredded going down the stretch. Very awesome to see. The other player is just obviously Kevin Jones. We kind of already covered him, but he's on the brink of real success, and I think he's going to pull off an Elite Series win this year. That's kind of my call. So the other thing worth mentioning is these baskets. And this is an interesting topic. Actually, you know what? I'm going to just save that one for a later segment, because it's not a real long topic, but it's kind of a separate subject. So we're going to save that for a later segment. There's definitely some things I want to say about the basket situations and even what the Disc Golf Pro Tour is doing about it. The last kind of significant thing here, I felt like Eagle McMahon is going to have kind of a breakout from his injury in either the Jonesboro or Dynamic Discs Open. And he kind of had it here at Jonesboro. Oh. never mind.
Yeah, I'm not seeing him.
He DNF'd.
Oh, interesting.
I did not know that. So, about that. He shot a 4 under. Okay, I guess I just kind of lost my... Yeah.
Your story.
Yeah. So, I'm just trying to kind of figure out what the real storyline is here. I was kind of following him at first, and it seemed like he was doing all right. So yeah, he shot -8 first round, and that's what I saw. And I was like, wow, that's pretty good. And then second round he shot a -4, I believe. Yes, he shot a -4. So pretty mediocre there, but still, really, I mean, 12 under par, he was sort of in the conversation. And then it looks like, I'm just going to quick bring up the final round here to see what hole he DNF'd on. But somehow I just completely missed this. I don't know. I don't remember them mentioning it on live coverage or anything like that.
Looks like it was after hole 5 that he DNF'd. He got a par. And, yeah, I don't know what happened, but that's when he DNF'd.
Okay, yeah. So he went bogey, bogey, par, par, par. And then he DNF'd. So, yeah.
It's just really interesting because I don't... Whoops, my bad. I didn't hear anyone talk about this at all. And looking on his Instagram, he did not post anything there either about it. So I don't know what's going on with him, but hopefully... Yeah, hopefully it's not another injury, or I don't know. Not sure about that.
Yeah. Definitely interesting. But yeah, kind of what I was saying about him is that his forehand was definitely kind of whacked. It would look completely normal for the first part of the throw, and then his follow through was just not Eagle McMahon, and it just, they were coming out early and high, and they just didn't look good. I miss Eagle, but yeah, I'm ready to see him kind of come back, but we'll see, what he has for the rest of the season. Yeah, as far as the FPO side storylines, Missy Gannon again towards the top. Cat Merch was just, I don't really understand what she was trying to prove, but she was good and she's kind of funny. But yeah, I haven't really seen her name around just a whole lot. Valerie Mandahano, top 10 finish once again. Paige Pierce with a great 8-under final round to bounce her up, but still did not beat out Kristen Tatar even in the final round. Kona Panis looks like -1 total at tie for 16th, so decent tournament for her. But yeah, aside from that, nothing real outstanding to me in the FPL. All right, moving on to the next segment of the podcast. So we're just gonna kind of have a short segment here. About the baskets, as I was saying. So, yeah, these baskets, these Prodigy baskets, I do not like what I see from them. They seem to have side chain outs.
Yeah. It's just kind of, the basket situation has just been kind of interesting because, like, you just see these portable baskets, and I think they're PDGA approved for tournament play, at least a lot of them, and so I'm not sure. Yeah, it just seems like it's one of those areas that's kind of old, outdated, and yeah, I'm curious to know what they're doing about it. I haven't heard anything, have you?
So they're not going to be able to do anything about the mainstream tournaments because they're not going to be able to replace all the baskets and all the courses. And I think it's all right for most courses. However, for the Elite Series events, I do think they need to do something. And I've been hearing rumors for a little while, and I think it's getting more serious now. The Disc Golf Pro Tour is working on designing their own baskets. I don't know what they're going to be like. I would sure hope they're good, because if they're going to be standard, they better be good.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Are we going to see the Chainstar Pro type of thing where it has a three layer? Are we going to see the more disc catcher style where it's just two layer? I don't know. But I'm excited to see what they come out with. I'm guessing that'll be a 2023 thing. I'm sure they won't start it this year. Yeah. But Ezra Aderholt, when he putted the one time, and it really should have stuck. It didn't quite stick. And he just said straight up, "These baskets suck." And I was just, yeah. You see it that Waco too, those baskets. It just, the Prodigy ones are bad. Yeah, I don't know what really the Harry they're doing with that dumb webbing on the inside, but it looks nasty and they are terrible.
Yeah, that's just kind of the bottom line. But it's kind of interesting because baskets are something that you could, I mean, like when you think about it at first, it kind of seems like to standardize the baskets is just kind of strange and weird. But at the same time, it kind of makes sense because that's the one thing that should be fair for everyone. That's the thing that should not be failing. If you throw a good putt, it should be paid in full. It should not be, you should not be getting cheated. So yeah, I think that'd be a great thing for the Disc Golf Pro Tour to do. Obviously it's gonna be more work, but disc golf is growing and I feel like they are getting to that stage where that would be a possibility.
Yeah. It's gonna be different because we're used to seeing brand names on our baskets. We see Discraft baskets, we see Prodigy baskets, we see Innova baskets, we see MVP baskets. I think that's actually all. But
Dynamic Disc baskets.
Dynamic Disc, those also DDO. Suck. Those also suck. Those also suck.
I thought you were raving about them.
No.
I thought you liked them.
I like the sound of them, and I like the feel of them. However, the baskets are too short. They don't hang down.
The chains?
The chains. And they're just too skinny and stuff because of that. They don't catch right. They do not catch them. I love disc catchers and Chainstar Pros. I do like. However, I've not used them much. But from what I see and from what I hear, I think they're phenomenal. But, yeah. So, I hope they do get that standardized. And I think they're gonna.
The next segment is Bad Stats. All right, so Bad Stats is a segment where we basically point out the stats of the players who did not do so great in the last event. So basically, the rules are that it has to be somebody that was either 50th place or higher. So we're just going to use Siri to generate a random number between 50 and 113 in this case. And then we're going to pick that person and just check out their stats, which will probably be bad. Pick a number between 50 and 113.
It's 52.
All okay. Right.
There you heard it. 52nd
so
place.
So we're headed to spot number 52.
And I'm guessing they're tied for something.
This is awkward.
Tied spots.
Because there is no 52.
What? Oh, because they're tied for 50.
Skips. So we'll go to the nearest number, which is 51. And we get to choose out of these players. So we have Joe Lutz. Or what? Joey Lutz. Noah Fivish. I don't know. Zach Mountain. Bartosz Kowalewski. Kowalewski. And Linus Karlsson. So I would say either Linus or Zach. Let's not go with Linus.
No, let's not.
Zach Mountain.
All right. Zach Mountain. We all know who he is. So if you don't, then.
Whoa, he just is. You know who he is. We exactly. know you do.
If you don't, then you do.
If you don't, then you do. If you don't, then you're fired. So.
Well, I don't have the stats. Cause
no, stuff. I'm saying a hum because I see a really bad stat.
Oh. So who is it again?
Zach Mellon. And he is at 0% parked. 0% parked. Now, parked, if you all don't know, is between 0 and 11 feet for birdie or better. So he was not inside 0 to 11 feet ever for a birdie, and that is
on
very
any
depressing.
Hole in this
that is
entire
really depressing.
Tournament.
However, it looks like it's his drives that are that really suck.
That's a great segment.
So yeah, 46% circle through regulation. Okay, so okay.
Just for reference, I think that was my stats last disc golf round. 46% circle 1X.
Was it actually?
I think it actually was.
Okay, so you suck too.
Exactly.
But so this is throwing stats. So in fairway hits, he's 60%, 110th. Parked, he's 111th at the very bottom because he's 0%. 93rd in circle 1 in regulation, which means he's inside circle 1 for birdie. So 25% of the time he was inside circle 1 for birdie. 102nd in circle 2 for birdie. So 46% there. However, his putting was relatively good. 24th in circle 1X. And 8th in circle 2, which is pretty good. So at least he putted well. But he sucks at throwing the disc. Sorry.
Yeah, needless to say. Zach Mountain, shape it up.
Yeah, you suck. He did actually shoot relatively consistent, though. -2, -2, -3. And to be quite honest, 50th is not actually that bad. It's just it happened to pick a number that was pretty low.
Yeah, exactly.
So really... could be a lot worse. And yeah, that's just good rounds actually. 2, 2, and 3.
So you got it, Zach Mountain.
I think that pretty much wraps it up for this podcast. We'll definitely be back again for another podcast next week. And yeah, I have a tournament. My first tournament actually of the year is planned, booked for this coming weekend. It's a B tier 25. Open player, so I'm looking forward to that. Saturday only B tier, and it's a 4-hour drive, and I'll probably only get one practice round in. So, yeah, but it's gonna be fun anyway. I'm gonna wing it, give it my best, and see what happens.
Yeah, and watch for the video of that tournament coming out on Disc Golf Coolness, because we are gonna document that. I didn't make it into the tournament myself. I'm still on the wait list right now, so that's fun. But yeah, I'm going to video that and watch for that video.
And it's going to be popping off.
Yeah.
All right. I think that is the end of our podcast. Thanks for tuning in. I guess it wouldn't be tuning in. Thanks for listening.
Yeah.
I hope you enjoyed it. And we will see you in our next pod. No, we won't see you either.
Wait, it's episode, not podcast. This isn't the end of our podcast.
Our next podcast. Wouldn't that be ripping? So next year we're going to be... next week
new
we're going to be...
new podcast every
all right, well, anyway. That's the end of this episode. And we will see you in episode number 2. We will hear you in episode number 2.